Now, most of us do our best not to think about death, but there's always part of our minds that knows this can't go on forever. Part of us always knows that we're just a doctor's visit away or a phone call away from being starkly reminded with the fact of our own mortality or of those closest to us. Now, I'm sure many of you in this room have experienced this in some form. You must know how uncanny it is to suddenly be thrown out of the normal course of your life and just be given the full-time job of not dying or caring for someone who is. But the one thing people tend to realize at moments like this is that they wasted a lot of time when life was normal. It's not just what they did with their time. It's not just that they spent too much time working or compulsively checking email. It's that they cared about the wrong things. They regret what they cared about. Their attention was bound up in petty concerns that year after year when life was normal. And this is a paradox, of course, because we all know this epiphany is coming. But don't you know this is coming? Don't you know that there's going to come a day when you'll be sick or someone close to you will die, and you'll look back on the kinds of things that captured your attention, and you'll think, what was I doing? You know this, and yet, if you're like most people, you will spend most of your time in life tacitly presuming you'll live forever. Maybe it's like watching a bad movie for the fourth time. Or bickering with your spouse. These things only make sense in light of eternity. There better be a heaven if we're going to waste our time like that. So unlike religious people, we atheists really have a good reason to make the most of life, to make the most of the present moment. Because even if you live to be 100, there's just not that many days in life. So what is the point of life? I mean, is anything sacred? Does such a question even make sense? But this is what religious people are worried about. And I think these questions do make sense, and there are answers to them. But the answers are not a matter of getting more information. The answer is a change in attitude. There are ways of experiencing life as sacred without believing anything, and certainly without believing anything on insufficient evidence. There are ways to really live in the present moment. What's the alternative? It is always now. However much you feel you may need to plan for the future, to anticipate it, to mitigate risks, the reality of your life is now. And I think this is a liberating truth about the nature of the human mind. In fact, I think there's probably nothing more important to understand about your mind than that, if you want to be happy in this world. The past is a memory. It's a thought arising in the present. The future is merely anticipated. It is another thought arising now. Okay, what we truly have is this moment and this. And we spend most of our lives forgetting this truth, repudiating it, fleeing it, overlooking it. And the horror is that we succeed. We manage to never really connect with the present moment and find fulfillment there because we are continually hoping to become happy in the future. And the future never arrives. Now, even when we think we're in the present moment, we're in very subtle ways always looking over its shoulder, anticipating what's coming next. We are always solving a problem. And it's possible to simply drop your problem, if only for a moment, and enjoy whatever is true of your life in the present. But if I'm going to talk about this crucial point, I do have to say a few things that you've probably heard before and probably dismissed because it came bundled with religious metaphysics and superstition. This is not a matter of new information or more information. It requires a change in attitude. It requires a change in the attentiveness you pay to your experience in the present moment. Now, of course, when we talk about conscious experience, we're all once again talking about death, because if consciousness is just arising dependent upon the brain, then death is real, and every religion ever devised is false. And needless to say, most people are walking around with an intuition that that's not true, that consciousness is in some sense independent of the body. Now, there are very good reasons to doubt that intuition, of course. We know that introspection offers us a very poor view of the material basis of our inner lives. There are 100 billion neurons in the brain. Okay, there are more, each making thousands of connections to other cells. There are more connections in a single cubic centimeter of brain tissue than stars in our galaxy. And yet our inner experience offers absolutely no clue that this is the case. And so we're not just slightly out of touch with the material basis of our inner lives, we're completely out of touch with it. I mean, I actually think about the human brain a fair amount, but it almost never occurs to me that I actually have one. So we have a very limited view of what's going on. We're subjectively unaware of most of what our minds are doing. And yet when we think about what matters is consciousness and its contents. Okay, consciousness is everything. Our experience of the world, the experience of those we care about, is a matter of consciousness and its contents. The most important question for us is, how can we truly be fulfilled in life? How can we create lives that are truly worth living, given that these lives come to an end? We're all in the business of seeking fulfillment and relief from suffering. So the frame we put around the present moment is important and largely determines our experience of it. But it seems possible, in fact, to experience life more nakedly than this, to experience it without an obvious frame, to pay attention to the present moment closely enough so that you're not doing anything to it. And there are techniques for doing this. So I want to try a little experiment with you. Please close your eyes. And you might want to adjust your posture so that you're comfortable sitting. And just feel yourself sitting there in your seat. Take a few deep breaths. And just let gravity settle you in your seat. And then you can let your breath just come and go naturally. Become aware of this sensation of sitting. Feel the weight of your body. Feel the weight of your arms and shoulders. Feel your back and your legs against the seat. And just notice your body however it appears, whatever sensations you notice. Sensations of pressure or vibration or warmth, tension, aching, whatever arises. But try to feel this as closely as possible. now gradually become aware of the sensation of breathing. Wherever you happen to feel it, either at the tip of the nose or the rising and falling of your chest or the rising and falling of your abdomen. Just pay attention to the sensations associated with each inhalation and each exhalation. There's no need to control the breath, just let it come and go. See if you can feel the next inhalation from the moment it arises and just cover it until the moment it stops. And do the same with your exhalations. Listen to the sounds in the room. Just let your mind now be the open space in which sounds and sensations arise. Now, you don't need to make any heroic effort to focus. Just notice what you notice. Notice everything that you notice arises spontaneously. You don't have to move toward it. Just relax and notice the next sensation, the next sound. Now see if you can pay even closer attention. There's a layer of concepts here that you can get behind. If, for instance, feel the sensations in your hands. If you really pay attention, you will see that you don't actually feel their shape. Okay, you have a mental image of your hands, but if you pay close attention, you will feel just the raw sensations of tingling, vibration, pressure, a much more diffuse cloud of sensation. So see if you can feel your hands closely enough to relinquish their shape. So too with the rest of your body. See if you can just let it dissolve into a cloud of sensation. Just be the space in which each new raw sensation arises. Feel the sensations of your face and head. Now you might feel that your consciousness is in your head or behind your face. But as a matter of experience, these are just more sensations arising in consciousness. The only evidence of your face and head is a sensation arising in consciousness at this moment. Now, notice what sort of mood you are in. If you feel restless or bored, take that constellation of energy itself as an object of consciousness. Okay, feel these states of mind, however they appear in the body. If you're sleepy, notice that feeling, whether there's a pattern of sensation on your face, in the eyes. So sounds and sensations and feelings are just announcing this open space of consciousness. Now you may notice as you try to pay attention to raw sensation that thoughts continually intrude. You find yourself thinking without knowing that you were thinking. That the moment you notice that, the moment you notice a thought in the mind, take that as an object of consciousness. Just watch it, if it's a visual image, or if there's language, and then come back to sensations and sounds. We're just going to do this for a few more moments, so allow yourself to begin again, as though for the first time. To just feel the next breath. Okay, so now you can open your eyes. Now, it's easy to feel when you open your eyes that something has fundamentally changed. You know, a moment ago you seemed to be in your head, focusing on your inner experience, but now you open your eyes and you're out in the world again. But nothing has fundamentally changed. The world you see with your open eyes is in the same place you were with your eyes closed. This is consciousness. Okay, I'm not saying the world isn't real, but as a matter of your experience, it's more accurate to say that I and everyone here are in your consciousness than that your consciousness is in this room. As a matter of experience. Okay, I am in your brain right now. Okay, everyone here is in your brain. Because I am pinching your brain. I mean, this is consciousness pinching consciousness. Whatever you can possibly notice in your body, in your mind, in the world, has only one place to appear in your conscious experience. Now, I'm not saying this is all just a dream, but as a neurological matter, it is very much like a dream. It is a dream that is constrained by inputs from the external world. And the dreams we call dreams at night are dreams that are not constrained by the external world. And that's why you seem to be able to get away with everything. But your mind is all you have. It's all you've ever had. It's all you have to offer other people. Okay, and this might sound callous to say when there may be many other aspects of your life that seem in need of being addressed. When you're struggling to find a career or you're sick. But it's still true. I mean, if you're perpetually angry and depressed and confused and unloving, it doesn't matter how much success you have or who is in your life, you're not going to enjoy any of it. I suspect you could all make a list of things you want to accomplish, of things that really need to be changed about your life. What is the significance of everything on that list? Each thing on that list seems to promise that if you could only do it, you would have reason to just be happy in the present moment. We are all trying to find a path back to the present moment and good enough reason to just be happy here. And the practice of meditation I just showed you, often called mindfulness meditation, is just a trick for doing that. It's a trick for setting aside your to-do list, if only for a few moments, and actually locate a feeling of fulfillment in the present. And again, I'm not saying that everything on your list is absurd or not worth accomplishing. But how dissatisfied with the present do you have to be in order to prepare a satisfying future? How neurotic do you have to be? How unhappy do you have to be? How much stress do you have to feel? How unpleasant do you have to be for other people to be around? If you're constantly ruminating about what you just did or what you should have done or what you would have done if you only had the chance, you will miss your life. You'll fail to connect with it. You'll fail to connect with other people. When other people talk, you'll be waiting for them to shut up so that you can say what's on your mind to say. Even when you don't have an opportunity to talk, in a moment like this, when you just need to listen, the conversation as an automaticity continues. You have a voice in your head that keeps saying things. Haven't you noticed? The conversation we have with ourselves every minute of the day comes at a cost. I'm not saying that discursive thought is not necessary or useful, but it is the mechanism by which most of our suffering is inflicted, the sorrow and the self-doubt and the anxiety and the fear, and yes, the fear of death. Thinking is useful, but being perpetually lost in thought isn't. Okay, being the mere hostage of the next thought that comes careening into consciousness isn't useful. So if there's an antidote to the fear of death and the experience of loss that's compatible with reason, I think it's to be found here. The purpose of life is pretty obvious. We are constantly... why do we create culture and form relationships? But beyond matters of mere survival. We are constantly trying to create and repair a world that our minds want to be in. And we, alone among humanity, for the most part, have realized that religion is a bad way to do that. So we have to start a new conversation. Thank you very much.